It is nearly 12 o'clock, and time for the KNXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where the light rain is gently drifting through a foggy mist. It is 46 degrees outside, and the airport is now down to 1 3/4 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is advising us to look for more rain for the rest of the day until about 7 p.m. tonight at least. Northeast winds to 15, gusting to 20 today, turning to the north and coming down to about 10. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kodiak kids celebrated Halloween at the Chamber of Commerce's downtown trick-or-treat. Brian Benoit was there looking for a Kit Kat. Residents of Bethel began noticing a sheen. Then they noticed a partially sunken fuel barge. And the Permanent Fund Board looks to be thinking conservatively.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. Israeli ground troops are advancing on Gaza City as aerial bombardments go on nearly a month into the war that's seen thousands killed. President Biden says 74 Americans escaped Gaza today at the Rafah crossing to Egypt. NPR's Alyssa Nadworny reports hundreds were approved to get out.
Crossing the border is a time-consuming process, and it's not clear everyone on the list today will get through. But for many U.S. passport holders, it was a day that was a long time coming. Yumna Shafi was on the Gaza side of the crossing with her mom, Sanaa.
Some of my friends are in there, in Gaza, and my family's there. So I'm kind of scared inside, but I'm also happy to leave because I'm going to be able to be safe.
It's been so difficult living in Gaza in the last 25 days. I think this is our only chance to get to a better place and a safer place, just for the sake of the kids.
Alyssa Nadworny, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The Justice Department has announced grants to help law enforcement fight violent crime, NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco says the largest chunk of the more than $330 million in grant funds will allow local law enforcement agencies to hire some 1,700 new police officers in communities across the United States. This comes as police departments across the country struggle with staff levels. The remaining funds will go into school violence prevention programs in some 200 school districts to help improve security at schools, as well as towards violence prevention and community policing strategies. Monaco says that new crime statistics released by the FBI recently show that murder and manslaughter decreased in 2022 compared to 2021, which she says shows the administration's strategy is producing results. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The Senate has gotten around Alabama Republican Senator Tommy Tuberville voting 95-1 to confirm the nominations of two military leaders. Admiral Lisa Franchetti was confirmed to lead the Navy as the first woman in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and General David Alvin was confirmed as Air Force Chief of Staff. Tuberville has drawn bipartisan criticism for holding up hundreds of military confirmations in protest, he says, of Pentagon abortion policy. The Labor Department says productivity rose more than expected this summer. NPR Scott Horsley reports.
Workers' productivity jumped by 4.7% in the third quarter. That's the biggest increase in 3 years. Higher productivity allows employers to pay higher wages without fueling inflation. New claims for unemployment benefits inched up last week, but are still low by historical standards. We'll get a report on October's unemployment rate tomorrow. The rate's been below 4% for more than a year and a half, the longest streak since the 1960s. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Kodiak had a few events to celebrate Halloween on Tuesday. Kodiak High School held its second annual Trunk or Treat in the high school parking lot, and the library hosted a haunted house. But the main event was the downtown trick-or-treating held by the Chamber of Commerce. As KMXT's Brian Benoit reports, hundreds of costumed children wandered downtown to fill their buckets and bags for the holiday.
Halloween was wet and windy in Kodiak this year, but that didn't stop trick-or-treaters downtown or any of the stores that set up tables and sent dressed-up staff to the sidewalk for the holiday. Beth Kaler is one of the owners of Grand Slam Toys and Games. She just moved to the new marketplace downtown in the last few weeks, and it's her first time participating in the annual tradition.
We're really excited to participate this year. We have been bringing our kids down since they were little, and they're teenagers now, and to be able to finally participate downtown. I love seeing all the little kids. We've had a couple come in already, and it's just so fun and sweet and just exciting.
Her family even coordinated their outfits for the holiday.
We've never done a family costume, and our 16-year-old was like, can we do a family costume? And I'm not going to turn a 16-year-old down.
They dressed up as Little Red Riding Hood. Their daughter was Red, their son was the Huntsman, the father was the Big Bad Wolf, and Beth was the grandma from the story. But not everyone had matching costumes. Jolene Lechner and her three kids were busy trying to hit every storefront they could.
We have a black cat. What was your guy's name? Speakerman?
Yes, Speakerman.
And Barbie.
Even the Kodiak Police Department made an appearance. They have an office at the harbor just across the street from the main festivities, but they were giving candy out the back of a cop car to be a bit closer to the action. Francis De La Fuente is a public information officer for the department.
It's such an awkward position that it's better to be right here with everybody, you know?
He says giving out candy for Halloween is one of his favorite parts of the job.
This is one of the best days in Kodiak. We see all the kids, rain or shine, they're all here, right? So just seeing the smiling faces of all the kids are pretty good.
Happy Halloween!
More than 5 dozen businesses participated in the celebration this year, but a representative for the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce said by phone that they're already planning to make downtown trick-or-treat even bigger next year. In line for a Kit Kat in Kodiak, I'm Brian Fenton.
A retired vessel owned by the fuel distribution company Vitus Energy has become partially submerged in the Kuskokwim River, emitting a large sheen. KYUK's Evan Erickson has more.
On Monday morning, a pilot flying over the Kuskokwim River shared an image with members of Bethel Search and Rescue. It showed a large sheen, hundreds of feet long, what appeared to be spilled oil or fuel coating the lower end of Steamboat Slough just upriver from Bethel. By the afternoon, the sheen had made its way from the slough into the main stem of the Kuskokwim River. Its source was the Francis Snow, a recently retired assist vessel owned by fuel distribution company Vitus Energy. It had been tied up in Steamboat Slough since at least September, according to Bethel Search and Rescue. Shortly after the discovery of the spill, Bethel Search and Rescue member Earl Samuelson, who was about 7 miles downriver in Neposkiok, heard that ice and poor visibility were blocking fellow volunteers in Bethel from heading out to investigate.
They were concerned of oil in the air, in the water, noticeable at the seawall, and they weren't able to respond out of Bethel.
While Samuelson and his son were ultimately turned back in their attempt to navigate the ice-choked river near Neposkiok, something else caught their attention.
We did notice also in this was the smell of diesel fuel in the air right there. I say diesel because gas has a different smell. You could really tell the difference between gas and diesel fuel.
Whether Samuelson was smelling fuel that had made its way miles downriver from Steamboat Slough is still unknown. It wasn't until Tuesday morning that Vitus was able to send one of its tugboats, the Chena, to assess what had gone wrong on the Francis Snow. According to Bernie Nowicki, Western Region On-Scene Coordinator for the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, Vitus crews found the stern of the approximately 60-foot vessel roughly one-third submerged and the engine room flooded. They placed absorbent booms around the vessel to contain any additional release of contaminants into the slough. They also began the process of trying to right the Francis Snow.
Vitus Energy went on to state that there is a pocket of diesel fuel within the vessel. Size has not been determined at this time. Estimate of the fuel on board the vessel is 250 to 300 gallons at the time the vessel was moored.
Barbara Anvil, who owns a property just a couple hundred feet from the site of the spill, said she was shocked that fuel had been left on board the unoccupied vessel.
Well, why wasn't it taken out of there?
You know, they had all summer to do it.
It is still unclear how much, if any, of that fuel may have spilled into the Kuskokwim River. In a phone call Tuesday afternoon, Vitus CEO Mark Smith said that crews were no longer seeing a sheen trailing from the Francis Snow. Smith said the vessel was in the process of being dewatered and prepped for transit and haul out in Bethel. Smith declined to speculate about how the vessel may have ended up partially submerged. Anvil said that she had noticed something was wrong with the Francis Snow back in July.
I noticed that this summer when I was up there that Francis Snow was tilting. I knew something was happening with it, you know.
For years, Anvil said she has been trying to bring more attention to the need to clean up the dozens of barges in and around Steamboat Slough, a tug-of-war that has been playing out between state and federal agencies. Unfortunately, that attention could end up coming in response to, rather than in anticipation of, cases like the Francis Snow. As of Tuesday, neither Vitus Energy nor state and federal agencies had released public statements regarding the spill and its potential environmental impacts. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Alaska state troopers fatally shot an armed suspect in Healy on Wednesday after a high-speed chase up the park's highway. KUAC's Tim Ellis has this report.
According to a trooper dispatch, the chase began a little after 1 p.m. Wednesday when troopers tried to stop a northbound pickup. The driver refused and fired multiple shots at the pursuing officers. Troopers say they fired back and hit the suspect, but he continued driving. The dispatch says the chase ended when troopers laid spike strips on the highway and rammed the pickup to a halt. There was another exchange of gunfire and the driver was killed. A woman passenger in the pickup was not injured, nor were any of the law enforcement officers involved, including some from other agencies. Troopers intermittently stopped traffic on the parks around Healy between milepost 250 to 257 for about 3.5 hours during the chase and afterward to investigate the scene and clear the wreckage. Troopers say the suspect's body was sent to the state medical examiner's office in Anchorage. They'll release his name after notification of his family. The dispatch report says the troopers who fired their weapons were placed on administrative leave as required by state Department of Public Safety policy, and their names will be released on Saturday, 72 hours after the shooting. The Alaska Bureau of Investigation will look into the shooting, as is also required by department policy. The findings will then be independently reviewed by the Alaska Office of Special Prosecutions, a routine requirement for officer-involved shootings. A trooper spokesperson declined Wednesday evening to answer questions about the case. The incident follows a trooper shooting of an armed man in Tok on Monday. Troopers say 21-year-old Timothy Thomas of Northway was shot after he tried to break into a room at the Three Bears Motel and brandished an assault-style rifle. That shooting also is under investigation. Troopers are scheduled to release the name of the officer involved today. In Delta Junction, I'm Tim Ellis.
The Alaska Permanent Fund appears headed toward maintaining its current steady growth rather than pursuing riskier, higher return investments over the next few years. That's the upshot from a Permanent Fund Corporation board meeting on Monday, according to the Alaska Beacon. Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks says the meeting was a sort of brainstorming session ahead of a decision on a 4-year strategic plan for the state's sovereign oil wealth fund, which pays for both state government and annual dividends to Alaskans. As Brooks told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, the Permanent Fund Board's discussions are happening in the context of a long-term goal of growing the fund to $100 billion.
But the trick is, how do you get to it? I mean, I'd love to run a 100-meter dash in 10 seconds, but I'd have to run 27 miles an hour to be able to do it, and I can't do that, Casey. So if you want to get to $100 billion in 5 years, you'd have to have such a high rate of return that it's almost impossible to get without doing some really risky things. Like one of the scenarios that was discussed was that in order to have even the chance of getting the returns that you'd need to hit $100 billion in 5 years, you'd have to borrow about $18 billion, which is equivalent to about a quarter of the permanent fund's value.
When we talk about risky investments, what are we actually talking about? Like risky stocks that they would put their money into?
In the sense of the permanent fund, what we're talking about is private equity. these are companies that aren't selling stocks yet. They're young tech companies, a lot of times, that are looking for investors to say, give us money, we'll build the next great widget, the next great app, and then when we start to sell stock, you'll make your money back. The permanent fund has had some hits in private equity, but right now the private equity markets aren't looking that great, and the permanent fund's advisory board, made up of top investors at Microsoft and in Texas and elsewhere, it said, you know, right now most investment funds are looking at lower returns, not higher returns. And so it'd be risky to go out and chase those.
Yeah, I feel like for me, running a 100-meter dash would be risky in and of itself. But we're talking about numbers here. We're talking about money. I guess I wonder, what is the risk? I mean, when you say risky, what are they risking if they go for a higher return?
Right. In the 100-meter dash, you could slip and fall on your face. But if the permanent fund does that, the equivalent is losing value in the fund. And so instead of having more money to invest, there's less money. And the state's budget would eventually take a hit because with less money in the permanent fund, that's less money available for the state treasury, less money for dividends and services. And because the permanent fund's such a big part of the state budget, that means everything else gets affected.
And I think, as you noted in your story at AlaskaBeacon.com, the board all but rejected this idea of seeking those higher returns, those riskier investments. What happens next? I mean, I guess they could still decide to go for that, but your sense is that they won't.
Right. Talking to the trustees, they're not going to take the riskiest possible approach. They don't think they can get $100 to $100 billion in 5 years. Doesn't mean they might look at different ways to increase returns. That's definitely possible. They're planning to include some legislative requests, changes to state law that governs the permanent fund, for example. But that's pretty small in comparison to a change in the fund's investment targets, which doesn't seem like it's going to happen now anymore.
That was Alaska Beacon reporter James Brooks talking to Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove. You can find his full story about the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation Board's discussion on its investment targets at AlaskaBeacon.com. A hit-and-run collision in Dillingham last weekend left a woman with severe injuries. Earlier this week, police arrested a suspect in the case. KDLG's Christina McDermott has more.
A woman survived a hit-and-run collision in Dillingham last weekend, and police have arrested a suspect. Vanita Flensburg suffered severe injuries, including fractures to her cheekbones and injury to her legs, according to a charging document filed in the case. Flensburg is now recovering in Anchorage. Dillingham police have charged 33-year-old Brandon Kozachenko for allegedly leaving the scene of an accident with injuries involving a vehicle as that vehicle's driver and not reporting the accident. According to the Dillingham Rescue Squad, emergency medical personnel received a call at about 2 a.m. on October 29th. They arrived to find Flensburg, who had been on foot, had been hit by a vehicle and was unconscious and bleeding from the mouth. An ambulance transported Flensburg to Kinakanak Hospital. The charges say officers used footage from a security camera at a nearby bar, the Willow Tree, to identify possible vehicles involved in the collision. On October 30th, they located a vehicle registered to the suspect that resembled one seen in the security footage. Police documented fresh scratches and damage on the vehicle. After multiple interviews, they arrested Kozachenko according to the charges. Flensburg's family and friends are raising money to support her recovery through a GoFundMe page. In Dillingham, I'm Christina McDermott.
There was a rise in the rate of suicides in Ketchikan in the month of September. September is also National Suicide Prevention Month. Mental health issues are an important topic around Alaska going into the winter months. Local reporter Jack Darrell reports on some professional tips and resources for Ketchikan residents and residents around Alaska to manage their mental health.
In mental health work, there's a term called protective factors. They're the things that help communities be more resilient in the face of mental health challenges. In other words, they help people cope. Dr. Brittany Pope, a professional counselor who has worked with Ketchikan residents for the last 8 years, says the city's in need of more protective factors.
There's an increased need for mental health services and decreased options. There's just a decreased resource.
Pope says there are other systemic hurdles to getting treatment, issues that it seems like Alaska and the entire nation are grappling with. Stigma, weak insurance coverage, lack of funding. Then there are the shortages right here in Ketchikan.
We have a residential for substance misuse, but we don't have like any residential treatment for mental health concerns. So if someone's looking for support and they need inpatient, the only thing we have is the hospital. We don't have anything else.
That residential program she mentioned for substance misuse? She's talking about Carr House. That's K-A-R, the addiction treatment facility in Ketchikan. Carr House is run by Aquila, and recently the Anchorage-based nonprofit announced that Carr House is shutting its doors too, temporarily. Pope says a program temporarily shutting down is par for the course.
I think the first issue is staff. Like, we don't have a ton of, it's a transient place. I mean, we don't have a ton of people who stay in place or stay in Ketchikan. Like, for example, me.
Pope herself is an example of someone who left Ketchikan. She went away for her postdoc internship and returns to the city for part of the year, providing telehealth services from Ohio to residents in Ketchikan for the other half of the year.
There's not a ton of providers in town or providers that stay. Working on staffing incentives for mental health agencies, being able to pay more is a big thing too, because typically we are an underpaid and overworked field.
Yes, there are staff shortages, Pope says. But the ones that do exist are very good and underutilized. The key is finding them. That part should be easy, says Lisa Delatt, but sometimes it isn't. Delatt is the community director of the Crisis Now program at the Ketchikan Wellness Coalition.
This team could help you connect to services, maybe provide some crisis intervention right on the spot, some crisis planning, some suicide prevention planning, like a care plan for yourself or with your family, and they could meet you, you know, at your home, on the street, the plaza, in the school, and places like that.
Delatt says there are three main components to Crisis Now's help model. First, people can call 988, the crisis support line. Delatt says it doesn't have to just be in your darkest moment. You could just be having a hard time. Secondly, there are people to respond to you when you're in need. And the third component, which is still being worked on, is some place to go. The Ketchikan Indian community is one of the community's public providers. They offer therapy, walk-in counseling, and other services for tribal members. The other public provider is Aquila, which connects residents to a therapist and offers services through the Gateway Center for Human Services. In a small town where the road ends at either side, problems can feel magnified. Delatt says Ketchikan's greatest protective factor is community.
That I used to say that Ketchikan makes its own sunshine, because we do have sporting events, we have bands and choirs, we have churches and all of the programs that they have. We have community theater, drama, theater, the arts, anything you want to do, basket weaving, painting, sculpting, pottery. So there are lots of opportunities to make your own sunshine.
The mental health provider's main message is this: if you're in crisis, there are options available to help you cope. You can call or text the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at any time to connect with a trained crisis counselor. In Ketchikan, I'm Jack Darrell.
At Starbucks, pumpkin spice is everything nice. I'm Novosafo with a Marketplace Minute. The pumpkin spice latte, a seasonal offering, helped give the chain's revenues a pick-me-up, to a quarterly record, in fact. The coffee maker also opened hundreds of new stores. Profits jumped 40% to more than $1 billion. The Labor Department says worker productivity has improved at its best pace in 3 years, 4.7% in the third quarter. Federal Reserve officials are watching this because improved productivity helps reduce labor costs, which in turn could suppress inflation. At the same time, the labor market remains resilient, with layoffs still below the pre-pandemic average. Initial claims for unemployment benefits last week rose by just 5,000 to a total of 217,000. I'm Nova Sapo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the second day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:25. It will set again promptly at 6:20, giving us 8 hours and 55 minutes of glorious daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 38 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 60 degrees, set in 1929, and our record low was 10 degrees, set in Chile, 1975. Currently 46 degrees. A light rain continues to drift down through a foggy mist, and they are down to 1.75 miles of visibility at the airport. Wind speeds variable at 3 miles per hour and 96% humidity there. The Weather Service is calling for rain until about 8 p.m. tonight. Northeast winds 15, gusting to 20, turning to the north and coming down to 10 tonight. 30% chance of rain tomorrow and a 40% chance of rain for Saturday, back to a 30% chance of rain on Sunday. And they're calling for partly sunny skies for Monday. We have an incoming tide. Our next high tide will be at 5:07 this afternoon and be 9 feet, followed by a midnight low tide at 12:09 a.m. of 0.4 feet here on the east side. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:32 this afternoon and be 13.5 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 12:32 this morning, tomorrow morning, of 0.5 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side, out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory for today with northeast winds 25, becoming northeast 20 tonight. 8-foot seas coming down to 6 feet tonight. Variable 10 tomorrow on our east side with seas to 5 feet. They are calling for northwest north winds to 30 knots beginning on Saturday. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tonight. Northeast 30 today in the Shelikof with seas to 9 feet. Northeast 25 tonight with 7-foot seas. And northeast 20 tomorrow, 5-foot seas subsiding to 3 feet tomorrow afternoon. On Saturday, they are calling for northwest 25, seas at 5 feet, and west 30 on Sunday in the Shelikof with seas at 7 feet. Here are some of the upcoming meetings in the Kodiak Island Borough open to the public. Tonight at 6:30 p.m., the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having their regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers. On Tuesday, November 7th, next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall. That's at 5:30 p.m. Next Wednesday, November 8th, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Conference Room at 6:30 p.m. And a week from today, next Thursday, the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough's website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Well, tomorrow is the day to go out on a date. It's the Friday Art Walk to begin with at Double Shovel Cider, Kodiak History Museum, the Aleutic Museum, partnering with the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center, Harborside Flyby, Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op, all having things going on. At Double Shovel, you can see Tyler Jackson. He blends mountain portraiture with mesmerizing underwater shots. At the Kodiak History Museum, they have a new temporary exhibit, Objects Uncovered, which features 14 objects from museum collection paired with stories from the community members. That goes from 5 to 7 p.m. tomorrow night. And the Aleutic Museum's partnership with the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Go to the National Wildlife Visitor Center for viewings of a short documentary film introducing Aleutic culture. At the Kodiak Harvest Foods Co-op, Amanda Meyer of Wild Ones Design will be displaying some of her work. And at the Harborside Flyby, Kodiak artist Heather Johnson from Mission Beach Studio will be showcasing some of her mixed media work. And it's all capped off at the Kodiak Arts Council's 11th Annual Artist Trading Card Show. That's happening at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium Foyer, and it features high school artists and local artists from around the community. That goes on 5 to 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium, and there's an opening reception as well, so that's a good thing to hit. And then, after you've done all that, be sure to go to Galley Tables for their Season 10 premiere. That's happening Friday night starting at 7 p.m. at the new downtown marketplace. The theme of this month's show is Origin Stories. Ellamy Tiller will be providing the music for this month's program. It's open to everyone, just a mere $7 entrance fee. For more information or to sign up to be a storyteller, go to galleytables.com. But again, that's 7 p.m. tomorrow night, the new downtown marketplace. 7 p.m., $7. Also on Friday, student creative writing submissions for Understory are now open just until tomorrow, though. It's open to UAA students with a minimum of 3 credits with the University of Alaska system. Submissions close tomorrow. Guidelines are still available at understorysubmissions@gmail.com. That's all one word, understorysubmissions@gmail.com. There's a series happening beginning next Tuesday on planning for life's changes. Kodiak College is proud to host a 4-part series in partnership with Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak. In session 1 on next Tuesday, you'll learn from a panel of experts in the field who will help you understand the importance of advancing healthcare directive, an advanced healthcare directive, a durable power of attorney, and a will. They'll also share local resources that are available. Ages 18 to 108 are welcome. And again, that's happening 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday at Kodiak College in room 128. Also on Tuesday, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announces the Kodiak Regional Planning Team meeting. That's happening at 9 a.m. via Zoom. Topics of the meeting will include an overview of the 2023 releases, egg takes, and returns for Katoy Bay and Pillar Creek hatcheries, summaries of the 2023 salmon harvest and ADF&G and KRAA data collection and research projects, as well as a discussion of designating criteria for unique and wild stocks in the Kodiak area. The meeting is open to the public and also open to public participation. For additional information, including the Zoom link, contact Dakota Edland at alaska.gov.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock.